to the ID Element, part of the Geneva Beta 2 special this week that we're offering. And for this episode, I'm with Matt Steele. He's a program manager for the Federated Identity Team. And Matt's here today to talk to us about Geneva Server Beta 2, and we're looking forward to that. But Matt, just before you give us some guidance and instruction and overview of what Geneva Server brings us in Beta 2, let's hear a little bit about you. What's your background and your work here at Microsoft?
So I started off as a software developer. I've got a lot of PKI background and did a lot of work with SAML a few years ago. I came to Microsoft 2.5 years ago. And since then, I've been working on Active Directory Federation Services, also called ADFS, and Geneva Server since then. So I've touched most parts of Geneva Server, whether it be manageability or trust management or the internal protocols, and kind of excited about announcing Beta 2 here.
Okay, great. All right, Matt, so we know with Beta 1, when I, you know, you get on and use Beta 1, it had some great capabilities with auto-configuration and just made things really nice, but let's just first talk about what's my experience going to be like when I start to set up Beta 2?
Sure, so talk a couple seconds about prereqs. You know, before you install Beta 2, you got to have a SQL Server somewhere, because we use SQL Server as our configuration database. So you have to have a SQL Server somewhere. You're going to want to have PowerShell, because we have some PowerShell components on the machine. You're also going to need to have IIS and .NET 3.5. So when you've got all those prereqs set up, you get the Beta 2 bits. You run the MSI, and the MSI is fairly straightforward. It's just going to kind of lay down the bits for you, get you set up. And at the end of the MSI, you're going to get a little prompt for running an initial configuration wizard. And what you do is you check that prompt and go forward, and the initial configuration wizard is now going to pop up. We spent a lot of time working on what that initial experience with Geneva would be like. And in Beta 1, you probably remember we had those auto-configure buttons
right. That
you kind of go down and click. And those worked well. They got you set up, but at the same time, it was kind of one of these things where you had to click those buttons, and you might not know offhand that, oh, I've got to click this auto-configure button before I've got a server ready to get up and go. So what we have now is this initial configuration wizard that introduces you to Geneva Server, and then as you go forward, it asks you the questions that it needs to know in order to set up Geneva Server, and then tells you everything it's going to do to set up Geneva Server. So typically what will happen is you'll run, you'll go to the next page, it'll ask you for your SQL Server instance. So if you're running, say, SQL Express locally, it'll pick that up automatically for you. So you don't have to go hunting through SQL instances and things like that. Just click Next. So you got localhost, the SQL Express instance, and then you click Next and you get a question about what service account you want to run under. And this is primarily for farm scenarios or high security scenarios where you want to run under like a separate account. We default to network service. Network service is fine for a standalone evaluation of Geneva Server. So if you're fine with network service, you click Next. And then you get that description I was talking about everything that's going to be set up on Geneva Server. And the initial configuration wizard sets up quite a few defaults in terms of the endpoints that are enabled, the host name that is used for the Geneva Server, the certificates that are used. We auto-generate a certificate for your token signing certificate, and we use whatever SSL certificate that was there before. That was one thing I didn't mention in the prereqs before. You also need to have an SSL certificate because Geneva Server uses SSL to secure communications to the server. If you don't have one because you don't have a corporate PKI or you don't want to pay whatever CA some money for certificates, it's really easy to auto-generate one inside of IIS 7. IIS 7 makes that really easy, so you can just go in there, generate a self-signed certificate. The only caveat about that is in your evaluation sort of lab, you need to make sure that certificate is trusted by any of the clients of the server. So once you've finished out that auto configuration wizard, that initial configuration wizard, you're set to go basically with Geneva Server. Geneva Server is set up with all the right defaults, and all you need to do is start adding applications or relying parties, as we call them, that are going to receive identity information and claims from Geneva Server.
Okay, very cool. Now, as far as deployment options or other deployment options, can you talk about that? You mentioned a farm scenario.
Sure. So a couple new deployment topologies that we support here in Beta 2. One of them is a proxy. So if you're in an organization that has like a perimeter network for defense in depth and the normal reasons you have perimeter networks, one of the challenges with perimeter networks is that most organizations like to terminate SSL on that perimeter network. And that's so that they can do, you know, a variety of things like either packet inspection or whatever else. They don't typically like encrypted traffic going all the way through their perimeter network back to their back-end systems. And so if you terminate SSL on that perimeter network, but you want to do client authentication of your clients coming from the internet with X509 certificates. So with that, you know, typically clients from the internet will prove possession of a private key using SSL mutual authentication. In that case, you need a component in your perimeter network that can terminate SSL, do that client authentication check, and then request a token back to Geneva server. And that component has to be trusted to do that. And it has to flow the original identity that originally called the proxy component back to Geneva server. And so we make a component like that called Geneva server proxy. And we allow that to be trusted, and we secure the channel from that proxy back to the Geneva server with another mutually authenticated SSL session. So that's a new thing that's supported in Beta 2 for these perimeter network type topologies. If you don't have a need to actually do, say, SSL client authentication, then most reverse proxies will work. They can actually just flow like the username and password all the way back to the back-end server. So it's a product like ISA that Microsoft makes. You could just use that as a standard reverse proxy if you're not trying to do the SSL X509 certificate client authentication there. So that's one thing, is that proxy deployment in the perimeter network. Another deployment topology that we've done a lot of work to support is a farm. So a lot of what Geneva Server does is cryptographic operations for signing and encrypting, and those are very processor intensive. So what we did is we took all the configuration out and put it in a back-end SQL Server database. And so now the front end is simply getting configuration information from that back-end database about the relying parties and the identity providers that are configured on that instance of Geneva Server and all the endpoints we're listening on, things along those lines. And then it just does all those crypto operations. So it's got all the configuration it needs, and it does those crypto operations of signing and encrypting and decrypting, all that kind of stuff. And so when you have all that going on, you're probably going to want to start to load balance that across multiple machines. And we call that a farm deployment. And so having a farm deployment, you can actually start to have any machine, and they're all just alike. They're all accessing the same back-end database. But they're able to handle, you know, requests separately. The same with any kind of web farm that you might see out there for handling website requests that are stateless. And so with those requests, we can distribute that cryptographic load. Another advantage of farms that's pretty clear too is failover. So, you know, if I've got three machines, if I have a hardware failure, then it's not a big deal because, you know, just the capacity of my farm has gone down, not the whole, you know, not the whole capability that I have for my enterprise. So we're going to see a lot of people looking at Beta 2 as their first chance to actually sort of deploy something that's going to be very similar to what they would deploy in production. Because they can either deploy two just for a simple failover, or if they've really got a high request load, thousands, hundreds per second requests that they need to handle for their enterprise, then they can scale out beyond two to make sure that they have enough for both failover and the load balancing that they want to do. So that's a lot of the work that we did in Beta 2, is making sure that those deployments are possible so people can start trying those out and seeing how it works for them.
Okay, very cool. Now, you also mentioned that one of the prerequisites was to have PowerShell on your machine. And why is that?
Well, so we did a lot of work on manageability in Beta 2. We know that we have a challenging system in Federation, and a lot of people have challenges getting Federation up and going. So we wanted to put that work into manageability to make that much easier to get going. And one of the things it's a push all across Microsoft is to enable your component to be administered via PowerShell. So we did a lot of work creating what's called a PowerShell commandlets. And if you're familiar with PowerShell, these are basically the actual commands you can enter in PowerShell to administer a Windows component. So we have basically anything that you can do in the UI of Geneva Server, you can do in PowerShell, and then some. There's even some things you can do in PowerShell that we haven't actually enabled in the UI. And PowerShell is great. You know, I can say, get me all of my relying parties, and get me only the ones where the name begins in Microsoft, and then from there set the identifier on all of those to be a certain variant of what's already there. So I can pipe these commandlets together
create
really, really powerful scripts. And so this is one of the solutions we have for people who want to manage Geneva Server at scale. So if I've got thousands of relying parties, it's unlikely that I'm going to be hunting and pecking through a UI and clicking and things along those lines.
Right.
But with PowerShell, I can just sort of quickly search for the relying party I'm looking for and pipe that into another commandlet that updates that relying party with a new certificate or a new identifier or whatever you need to do there. And so the PowerShell capabilities we have are very exciting. So we'll be seeing a lot of scripts and things like that that help to manage Geneva Server.
Okay, and as far as with the Beta 2, what's going to be available that people can download and get some idea on how to set up
these scripts? All that PowerShell capability is in the bits. So when you install the bits, if you open up PowerShell, and you can type get pssnapin, and the PowerShell geeks out there will appreciate that, get pssnapin hyphen registered, and that'll show you that the Microsoft PowerShell snapin is available to use. And this is sort of how PowerShell snapins work in general. You add that PowerShell snapin for your current session, and then you have all the commandlets at your disposal there, and you can look them up and take a look. In terms of the supporting documentation and scripts and things like that we're going to have, up on the Connect site, we're going to put together a PowerShell tutorial. So hopefully that's up there right now, and you can take a look at that. That'll have sort of an introduction to PowerShell with Geneva Server. So you can say, well, what commandlets are available? What can I do? What can I administer? And it's, if you are at all PowerShell inclined, it's a great way to get familiar with Geneva Server and all the things that can be administered on Geneva Server. Because PowerShell has this sort of verb-noun kind of construction. And so if you look at all the nouns, those are all the things that can be administered. And then the PowerShell verbs are just sort of, get an identity provider, set an identity provider, create a new identity provider. So it's a great way to get a feeling for everything you can do with Geneva Server. So we'll have that tutorial up there. The help file inside of Geneva Server has a little bit of PowerShell content, talks a little bit about that set of commandlets that we have. And then our deployment guide will be adding content to over time.
Okay, yeah. Very good. So now going back to Beta 1. Beta 1, we had Federation metadata.
Yep.
So that we could certainly go out and hit an endpoint for that Federation metadata and bring it in, and everything configures automatically for identity providers and for relying parties. So what's the next step with that? How does Beta 2 push that forward?
Sure. So we've done a few things there. We've augmented our support to support SAML metadata. We have WS Federation metadata and SAML metadata. If you look at the WS Federation standard for metadata, it's actually just an extension on top of SAML metadata. So you can express, and indeed this is what Geneva Server does, you can express both WS Federation metadata kind of concepts and SAML metadata concepts in the same metadata document. And Geneva Server publishes one of these. So we actually have support for auto-configuring all of SAML, by looking at a metadata document and getting that going for a partner, whether it's an identity provider or a SAML service provider, or relying party as we call them. We also added support for, you may remember from the Beta 1 demos, where when you're adding a relying party using that wizard, you type through the entire Federation metadata URL, which could be a pretty lengthy URL.
Right.
And if you've got some places, we know that some products are case-sensitive on their URLs. And so, let's say you lowercase your F by accident, the whole thing goes, you're beating your head against a wall as to what went wrong there. So we've added support for, since WS Federation defines a standard URL path, we've actually added support for typing in a host name, and we'll actually just try that standard URL path first. Now, if that doesn't work, we'll just try, looking for the metadata straight at that host name. But if you just type in sort of, say, I've got my metadata hosted at sts.microsoft.com at that standard metadata path, you can just type sts.microsoft.com, and the wizard will go out to the right place and pick it up using that standard URL path construction. So, it's not a huge deal, but it's a little thing that makes it a little bit easier, perhaps, especially during evaluation, one less opportunity for a typo there. And then the biggest thing that we did metadata-wise is we enabled relying parties and identity providers that are configured inside Geneva Server to automatically keep themselves up to date over time. So you can configure monitoring on an identity provider or a relying party inside of Geneva Server. And we have an overall monitoring interval, which is how often we go out and check for these identity providers and relying parties to be up to date. And we check their metadata, and we take that and we compare it against what we have locally for their configuration, and we see if anything's changed. So if they've added a new certificate or they've removed an old certificate, we can either flag that as an update, an event for the administrator to notice, there's been a change here, let me go see if I should update that. We also have a setting where we just keep it automatically up to date. If we see a certificate has vanished, you've already established the trust there, You already trust the SSL connection to keep that secure and the server authentication that's done there. We can say, hey, if they've published a new certificate, we'll just start using that new certificate. And that's up to the administrator as to whether they want to start doing those automatic updates or not. But that's great because, you know, previously with a certificate rollover that you might have across the Federation, it could just be a nightmare, especially when you're dealing with self-signed certificates. Because basically, you know, you were talking about emailing or calling up someone and saying, hey, I've got a new certificate. However, I need you to sort of have this new certificate before I can start signing with this new certificate. So I've got to find some way to get it to you. A lot of people aren't comfortable with email, so they want to hand somebody a disk. And, you know, the whole out-of-band kind of thing that we typically gloss over starts to become a really big headache for Federation. And, you know, one of the things we're trying to eliminate is all these headaches. So this way, you know, there's no out-of-band exchange that has to happen. We can keep things automatically up to date. And the complicated dance of this rollover, which I just started to talk about a second ago, of provisioning it over to the partner, waiting for the partner to have it and have it properly configured, and then actually doing the rollover, you know, switching to the new certificate, and then waiting for all your old tokens that you've been issuing with Geneva Server and your claims that you've been issuing, you have to wait for those to expire before telling your partners to remove the old certificate. So, you know, it's this really complicated thing. It's made much easier by just being able to do these automatic updates over time and look at Federation metadata. So, yeah, that's a lot of the work we did there.
And how do these events get to an administrator? How do they know that this event has happened? Is it emailed? Is it?
Well, so we event the event log in most cases. And so if you're using a product like System Center Operations Manager or any kind of, you know, operations management product that has the ability to look at a Windows event log, you can look at the Windows event logs of the machines in your farm, and you look for events that are saying, hey, you know, we've seen noticed a partner has been updated one way or the other. And so those products typically can handle all kinds of different eventing mechanisms, whether it's, you know, texting somebody on their phone or sending an email out or one way or the other. We didn't want to get into, you know, building an email server for a Geneva server, but putting those events in the Windows event log, we're kind of giving it over to whatever monitoring products can support that.
Okay. What about also information card support? We certainly had information card support in Beta 1, and how has that moved forward?
So the coolest thing about information cards are, you know, with the typical browser-based authentication and federation methods, which includes WS Federation, the passive profile that's defined in WS Federation, and the SAML web single sign-on profile, which use browsers and do redirects, one of the biggest problems people run into with those is this, what we call the home realm discovery problem. And this is basically, so I'm accessing, say, an outsourced service, and say this outsourced service does, you know, travel reservations or something like that, and I'm not the only company that they provide access to and federated single sign-on to. So typically, the first time I access this company, since they don't know who I am, I haven't authenticated my identity provider yet, they have to ask me, well, are you a Microsoft employee, or are you an employee of some other organization, you know, Intel, Boeing, some other organization? And a lot of times that's a little bit jarring for users that are accustomed to consuming their internal apps, where when they go to this internal app, they, you know, it automatically knows that, oh, hey, you know, you're Matt Steele at Microsoft, I'll just give you the service that you deserve. Having to choose, well, you don't even know if I'm from, you know, Microsoft or some other company, can be a little bit jarring for some employees. So that's the home realm discovery, that service has to figure out where to send you back to authenticate so that you can authenticate the first time. And so we can do a lot of things in terms of actually cooking that choice, and so we can preserve it for later, but the first time there's no way around it. So information cards are a piece of client state that can work with Windows Card Space to help get you around that choice by saying, by configuring on the client that you only support this particular identity provider, and so only that identity provider will be offered to you, as opposed to seeing choices for all kinds of companies that you don't recognize. And so in Geneva Server Beta 2, we heard a lot from enterprises that are like, hey, that's great, we really want to solve this problem, but we're not sure if we're not introducing a tougher problem by putting up a bunch of cards in front of users where they're not sure which card to use from Windows Card Space. And how do they get those information cards in the first place? So one of the big things we did in Geneva Server Beta 2 was allowed, since Geneva Server can issue information cards, we allowed people to configure group policies such that Card Space can automatically go and fetch cards from Geneva Server. So we will help you to generate that group policy and configure it appropriately with the right configuration from Geneva Server. And you configure that in your standard sort of group policy administration through AD. And once you've configured that, that group policy gets pushed down to the clients, and those Windows Card Space clients will then call up and get the cards automatically from our automatic provisioning endpoint.
Okay. Okay.
And so you configure what kind of card you want them to get, and then they get these cards automatically. And then there's also features in our beta coming up of Card Space that allow administrators to also set, anytime you go to this relying party, just to automatically use this card. So you get a Kerberos or Windows integrated authentication type experience, but you're actually federated across two entirely different domains. So yeah, it's really, really great, and you don't have that home realm discovery problem
anymore.
Yeah,
very neat.
Yeah, so that's a really exciting thing about information cards, and we've done a few things in Geneva Server to make that provisioning be silent and automatic so users don't have to worry about going and getting those themselves.
Okay, with respect to SAML, what have we done there in Beta 2?
So what we've been targeting on SAML all along is this Web SSO profile, and SAML has a conformance document that defines what they call operational modes, which is a set of a conformance tests that you conform to. And what we've been targeting is IDP Lite and SP Lite, those two conformance modes. IDP Lite is being an identity provider, so issuing identity out, and it's the light mode. So there's some more capabilities of SAML that aren't part of IDP Lite. But from talking to customers and from talking to a lot of the SAML vendors, we found that IDP Lite and SP Lite are by far what is demanded by customers and what's needed. So IDP Lite is about being an identity provider. SP Lite is about being a service provider or a relying party in our terminology. And that's about Geneva Server being able to accept tokens issued by other SAML vendors or Geneva Server using SAML protocol, using that SP Lite set of protocols or parameters. And so we're targeting those two operational modes for RTM, and we've made a lot of progress in Beta 2 on enabling SP Lite. That's something that wasn't there at all in Beta 1.
Right.
So now Geneva Server can receive tokens from another Geneva server using SAML protocol or another vendor that uses SAML protocol, like Sun and Novell and CA are all SAML vendors as well. We've done interop testing with them, and we can accept tokens from them and actually take those tokens, and we can continue to issue using the SAML protocol, or we can issue using WS Federation Passive. So you can use Geneva Server to almost do like a protocol transition between SAML and WS Federation Passive. You know, either way, you can receive WS Federation Passive and issue in SAML, or receive SAML and issue in WS Federation Passive.
Very cool.
And that's pretty cool because Geneva Framework by itself supports WS Federation Passive. So if you want to enable a Geneva Framework-based application to communicate with a SAML identity provider, to be able to be accessed by a SAML identity provider, you just put Geneva Server in front of it, and Geneva Server will do that protocol transition to WS Federation Passive and receive via SAML protocol. Another thing we did as part of supporting SP Lite is we supported artifact resolution. So typically, most WS Federation issuances are post-profile on the way back. You got these big tokens that won't fit on a query string line, and so you have to put them into a post body, a sort of HTTP down in the details thing. So if you try to do an HTTP redirect, they all get put on the query string, and most browsers will cut the query string around 2048 characters. So if we put them in a post, the only problem is there's no real HTTP standard secure way to redirect a post. So what we have to do is we have to put down an HTML form that has some JavaScript in it, and we automatically repost to this other place. And most browsers handle this just fine, but there are some special cases of places where you don't really want to do that. If you don't have a full browser stack that's actually consuming the protocol, and you don't want to have to implement all of JavaScript, you'd like to do these 302 redirects, because those are really, really simple. In other cases, too, let's say you've got like a mobile phone or something along those lines where you've got some bandwidth constriction, you don't want to have to put the whole token down to the client and have the client upload the whole token back, because they're going to be waiting for 10 seconds or some amount of time that just is not pleasant at all to get that up there. So the artifact profile of SAML allows you to just give what they call an artifact. It's a little identifier down to the client. The client hands the identifier back to the service provider or relying party, and that relying party can then reach back to the identity provider itself. That server reaches back to the identity provider and pulls the whole token down, And so the client is never involved in the actual token acquisition. It just takes this identifier over and gives it over to the relying party. The relying party goes and gets the whole token, and that sort of mechanism is called the artifact resolution or artifact profile. So it's another thing we support now as part of that SP Lite support on Geneva Server. When Geneva Server is acting as a relying party, it's receiving SAML tokens from other identity providers.
All right. Claims transformation.
Okay.
Big investment for the team this time.
So this was probably the biggest investment,
All right, well, tell us about it.
Okay. So we had some rudimentary capabilities in Beta 1, and you had some things that were set up by our wizards automatically, and we had another set of wizards that would actually sort of guide you through a few ways you could transform claims. And by far over time, the request we've gotten from customers is that they want, you know, anything and everything when it comes to claims transformation. They want a lot of robust capabilities. Because when you're talking about claims transformation, the information I'm going to give about the identity of someone, there's so many transformations you might want to do. And it almost gets down to a logic engine type capability. And so what we decided to do was just kind of go all out and offer as many capabilities as we can, and then focus on the manageability to make the common capabilities that you want to do as an identity provider or as a relying party, make those common capabilities really, really simple. So if I just want to go out to AD and get some attributes from AD and issue them as claims, we've made that just simple in the UI. You can do that without any problem. You just map those attributes to the claim types, and you're done. If I'm on, say, sort of the relying party side, and as a server, I just want to take some attributes from an identity provider and pass them through to my relying party, or just do some simple transformations like change, you know, a name claim type to an email claim type or vice versa. Those things are really easy. We also have an advanced mode that allows you to write in our native rule language more complex rules. So more complex rules include things like, if I see a name claim and the name is, you know, Bobby@Microsoft.com, and I see a group membership of a member of domain admins, then I'll issue a particular kind of claim over to this relying party. And you can say, you know, you can invent whatever claim you like at that point. So having multiple conditions to issue a single claim, also having value matching and pattern matching using regular expressions. You can actually write regular expressions for pattern matching if you want to. You don't have to. But if you want to do that to, say, check that a certain type of string is contained somewhere within the claim value or something along those lines, you can write those types of expressions. Another big piece that we did for Beta 2 is this capability of attribute stores. So now in these rules, you can actually write an attribute store issuance rule that goes out to what we call an attribute store to get values out of that. And that's how that AD rule I just mentioned a second ago, that's how that works. It's basically a rule that says, go out to AD, get the mail claim, the given name claim, and the SN claim, and issue them as the email address, or sorry, the mail attribute, the SN attribute, and the given name attribute. Issue those as the email address claim, the first name claim, and the last name claim, or something along those lines. And that's really easy to do in the UI. We've added a new capability in Beta 2 of supporting SQL attribute stores out of the box. So you can write rules that have SQL queries in them that literally go out, and they can have, you know, whatever joins you want in the queries and things like that, and you get back a set of values from that SQL, and then in the rule you say, you know, I want the first set of values to be issued as name claims and the second set of values to be issued as email claims. And you just construct your query to SQL properly. And this is great because we had a lot of organizations saying, you know, I've got a lot of identity data stuck in SQL somewhere, and it just doesn't, you know, I don't want to do an AD schema update, or it's relational data, so it doesn't fit well in AD, but I really want to be able to issue this as claims to my applications. I mean, my applications depend on SQL right now one way or the other. I can't really entirely claims aware my application unless I have the ability to put SQL in there. So we can do this out of the box now. Which is one of the reasons we need this sort of advanced rule language so you can define the SQL queries, things along those lines. We also have the ability to allow developers to write their own attribute stores that will plug into Geneva Server. So you can write an attribute store in .NET, so you're actually writing, say, C# code or Visual Basic code, and you're implementing a .NET interface. And then you use our management, whether it's PowerShell or our MMC, to register that implementation with Geneva Server. And then from your rules, you can call into that implementation and pass it claim values and get claim values back out of it and issue claims that come from that attribute store implementation. This allows you to basically go to any data store you want. You want to go to an XML file, you want to go to some other file, you want to access a web service, some maybe virtual directory product that we don't have native support for. Anybody can build one of these extensible attribute store implementations and ship that, and then you just add it into Geneva Server, and suddenly Geneva Server can support whatever that attribute store implementation was designed to support. So there's a lot of power right now, and what we tried to do is give as much power as possible into this language. And as well, for the 80% case of rules, the types of rules that people want to do, whether that's passing through simple transformations or just going out to an LDAP attribute store or Active Directory and getting a set of attributes to issue as claims, we're trying to make those just brain dead simple in the UI.
Very, very cool. There's also support for MOS 2007 in Geneva Beta 2.
So yeah, with ADFS, Active Directory Federation Services, it was one of the first things that I did when I came to Microsoft was we worked on providing a set of providers, ASP.NET providers. And MOS 2007 has this capability of using the ASP.NET provider mechanisms to populate attributes and membership and role information into MOS 2007. So ADFS v1 has a set of providers. What we've done is we've actually, for Geneva Server, we've implemented a new set of providers, and those ship with the Geneva framework. So you can use these ASP.NET providers to enable MOS 2007 to actually be claims aware. And this is demonstrated in the hands-on lab guide for TechEd this year. It's also going to be demonstrated by the step-by-step guides that we're publishing to Connect and elsewhere. So you'll actually be able to see this work with SharePoint and Geneva Server. So Geneva Server protecting MOS 2007. SharePoint instances, and we'll be providing things like scripts to help you configure those providers, those Geneva framework providers, against MOS 2007. So we have a pretty good story there. And neat thing is too, you know, with Geneva Server protecting MOS 2007, you can then transition to SAML if you want with Geneva Server. You can also accept information cards at Geneva Server. So if you want to have card space enabled SharePoint, things along those lines, you can use that Geneva Server as your trust management point. And then just basically redirect over to MOS 2007 with the capabilities that MOS 2007 understands in the Geneva framework provider. So it's a pretty neat capability and opens
very
up a lot
nice.
Of possibilities for MOS 2007.
Very nice.
Yeah.
All right. So let's say that I'm an ADFS v1 shop, and
yep.
we have invested in building claims aware applications.
Yep.
And so we have those out on a web server, and we have the ADFS claims aware web agent sitting in front of those. What do I have to do to use Geneva Server? Can I use Geneva Server, or do I have to rewrite those apps, or what? How does that go?
You don't have to rewrite those apps.
Okay.
So that's good information right off. What you need to do is you need to point, you know, as you're doing your migration, and we'll be coming out with migration guidance as we get closer to RTM. But if you're in a lab, you need to point that app, the web.config kind of configuration of that app, has some specific items in it for that ADFS v1 claims aware web agent. And one of them is the web service that it uses to configure itself against ADFS. And typically this will be something like /ADFS/federation server service.asmx is the URL that you typically put in there. So what you need to do is you need to point that at Geneva Server. So when you point that and put in the Geneva Server URL right there, Geneva Server will be able to answer those calls and help the web agent to actually automatically configure itself with Geneva Server. And then Geneva Server will issue tokens to that app, and that app can parse those the same way it would parse ADFS tokens. So on the Geneva Server side, you need to add that app as a relying party. And when you're going through the wizards for that relying party, you'll see a choice between using the Geneva Server profile and the ADFS profile. And the ADFS profile is really something that just helps you to configure ADFS federation servers or ADFS applications in the way that they support. So there's some things that the Geneva server supports that those servers do not support, so like encryption certificates. There's some types of claims that they don't support. So that profile helps you to not have to make all the choices that ADFS doesn't support. So you use that profile to set up a relying party for an app there. And then you go into our rule editing experience and you define a set of claims that are going to be issued for that relying party application. And then those claims will be sent in a token that can be read by the ADFS V1 ClaimsWare web agent. So then you're pretty much ready to go after that.
All right. This is great.
Great news
on Beta 2. Your team is certainly...
It's a lot to talk about. We only skimmed the surface. So hopefully, you know, people can check out our guidance. We're going to have really, really good docs is another thing that I should say right now. We're going to have design and deployment guides. And deployment guide specifically is going to have step-by-step guidance for all the things that you might want to go through on Geneva Server that's not specific to a particular scenario. So this is the kind of documentation guidance we would typically arrive at in RTM. But if people are actually playing with Geneva Server, they can go to this deployment guide and say, you know, I want to add a proxy with Geneva Server. What do I do? Here's how I do it, step by step. Whereas some of those things might not be in the particular hands-on lab guide scenarios that are end-to-end. Step-by-steps for just niche configurations and things like that are going to be in those docs. We'll have the PowerShell tutorial like I talked about and a lot of other stuff on the Connect site. So we're really excited about enabling people to experiment and play with it, and then obviously, you know, give us the feedback that we need to make it better for our upcoming releases.
Right. Excellent. And so the feedback just comes through the Geneva Forum.
Yep.
Right. Okay.
The Geneva Forum and the Connect site will have some capabilities for feedback as well.
Okay.
And we'll direct people to the right places there. So also Microsoft.com Geneva is another great place to go when you're looking for information on Geneva as well. So.
Excellent. This has been great, Matt. Thank you for joining us on this special segment of the ID Element.
No problem.
Thanks.